Welcome to the Nui Tech People podcast. My name is James McDonald. I spend my days interviewing some of the most innovative people working in the tech industry and hear some amazing stories. Each fortnight, we release a new episode sharing these conversations. This podcast aims to showcase the tech projects happening right here in Newcastle, provide key resources to help you grow your tech career, and share insights into the future of the Newcastle tech scene. Hope you enjoy this episode. Welcome to another episode of Nui Tech People. On today's episode, we have Chad Shuttleworth, Head of Digital at Streaming House, and also Jonathan Poynter, Managing Director at Nimbla Digital. Today, we speak about the brand new streaming platform that they've built, how that's been valuable to businesses during COVID, some of the resources that they recommend, how remote working has impacted their teams for the better. Really interested to sort of see their take on how COVID's affected their business and how they've adapted to move through this. Hope you enjoy this episode. Episode 48 of Nui Tech People. Today we have Jonathan, Managing Director, and Chad, Head of Video from Streaming House and Nimbla Digital. Welcome, guys.
Hey, thank you.
All right, locals in Newcastle, for those that don't know you, who wants to start, give us the overview of who you are to start with.
Oh, look, Nimbla Digital started over 10 years ago in Newcastle. Digital agency specializing in web development, content marketing, and digital brands. About 2 years ago, we started a live streaming company, Streaming House, and Chad took the reins of that last November.
Nice. You guys do a lot in the video space, obviously.
We do.
Streaming House. It ticks my boxes. It's a lot of what we've done here at Nui Tech People is invested in video. We invest in video really early. You've seen a lot of growth in that space.
I think massively, even over the last sort of 12 months that I've been in the game full time, I think it's grown the use of video in almost every single business. Now we see if you're not using video, it's what are you doing essentially?
Yeah.
Yes, the market's booming.
Yeah. Yeah. As I said, like this really, it's really sparked my interest. I came from a marketing background. This whole content marketing play is definitely true to my heart. It's definitely something we've invested hard in. What have you guys seen from a trends perspective over the past few years? Companies obviously investing more in marketing, more in video, but is there any sort of overriding trends you're seeing either globally, nationally, or more locally?
I'll take this one if you like. Look, I think from our point of view, we saw an explosion of video because it became so accessible. It was so cheap and easy. It used to be quite expensive.
Yeah.
And at the same time in marketing circles, you saw so quantity overtook quality. Still the case, I think. What we're seeing now is that the quality side of it is starting to, you know, raise its head. Those who look to do quality, those who reimagine what a user experience could be using video, generally tend to get the results that they're looking for. So I think there's a move from quantity to quality.
Yeah, I think everyone's got a smartphone, everyone's got a video at hand, right?
That's right.
Which gives everyone the ability to capture content.
Yeah.
Not all content is great content.
nope.
In saying that, some of the best content out there is that raw and true message.
Authentic, we call that.
Yeah. And people can capture that on their own.
No, they can. It doesn't mean people with a smartphone can't do good video content. No. You know, we have a mantra in the office where, you know, once a week you'll hear someone just shout out, "Don't put shit on the net."
Yeah.
There's enough of that there already.
So much.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can make really good quality video content with an iPhone. You just have to think it through a bit.
Yeah. I completely agree. I think even more, probably more so during COVID, right?
Like
Found we've been putting out a bunch of video content for a long while. And I think during COVID, there's a lot of, you know, sales gurus around and business consultants around and being like, you've got to talk to your customers. You can't get out in front of them. Okay,
that's right.
You've got to be putting out video content. So every man and his dog's now putting out video content.
So true.
Yeah. I think the key of what you mentioned before is about the quality. It's not even the quality of the actual video itself, but B is more so that messaging and the value add. So for me, the differentiator is, you know, what value add are you providing to your audience? Is that the sort of conversations you're having with clients?
Absolutely. Look, it's so easy when you're doing video content, and it's a little bit like social media to make it all about you.
Yeah.
because that's what you can film easily.
Yeah.
But if you stop and think it through, what is the experience of your user and your audience and your target market? You tend to make different types of content. Like social media, if you're talking about yourself all day, people will switch off. If you're putting out content that people resonate with, learn from, are entertained by, that's where you get them engaging. And that's sometimes not quite so easy to produce.
Completely agree. One of the stories you've told me a bit off air just before is in around the tech space and building your own software, and there's a growing arm to your business in around that. There's something true to my heart. It's something I think the audience would find quite interesting. There's for a bit of context, a lot of our audience is obviously technical. And I think in the startup space in Newcastle, which I've had quite a bit to do with, there's people who, you know, want to scratch or an itch or build a play with a little bit of software. Can you tell me about the story of the growing software element to Nimbler?
Yeah, we've got a couple of those. Yeah. I'll talk Nimbler, you talk Streaming House. With Nimbler, we found that reporting for our clients was the most important thing we could deliver as a value. And it was taking us hours to collate all the information. And we're a HubSpot partner, so we've got a really good automation platform with plenty of reporting. But it just wasn't quite hitting the mark we wanted to hit for our clients. So we set about writing a piece of software that actually sucks the data from every touch point, you know, from their phone systems right through to their social media. And it now takes us, you know, sort of about half an hour to pull together an entire monthly report, totally formatted, totally branded. And our clients really love it. It just gets loaded into the back end of their website too. So whether we present it to them or not, they've got access to that report straight away.
All right, I want to just stay here for a sec. So you've built that in-house yourself?
We have, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. It took a bit longer than we thought, but we got there.
I think that is the case with software. There's not too many software projects or teams that I'm working with that are like, we've delivered that on time and on budget every time.
Yep, said nobody ever. Yeah.
So if we talked about that, so you had internal development capability?
Yeah, always have and always will.
Yeah, obviously coming, building a lot of websites and working from that side, you've obviously got that resource.
We were pretty strong in the back end of things at that point. We had some really good, strong back end developers.
Yeah.
And, you know, it looked easy. It wasn't, as is always the case, but they pulled through.
Yeah.
And it's just saved us so much time, but also gave us the chance to focus on how to present this in a way that's really useful for clients.
Yeah.
And as a client, there are so many people who've, you know, slapped a very large analytics report on the table and said, there you go. It's not useful.
Yeah.
You want the data to be extracted in a way that you can quickly see how you've gone, where the weaknesses are, what you want to go forward. So we got a chance, and I guess that's the value of having those in-house developers, is we could fart ass around until we got the right thing.
Yeah.
I'm sure we drove our developers crazy, but now it's one of the sort of cornerstones of what we do for our clients.
And again, that's not scratch your own itch. You're building that's it for yourself.
We have had a couple of approaches for it.
Yeah, I was about to say that's where we're going next. Is that a potential revenue source down the track to white label that and provide that as a service to other agencies?
It's certainly something we've got an eye on.
Yeah.
We thought we'd look at it when COVID hit and things slowed down a bit.
Yeah.
We looked at something else and it's caused an explosion elsewhere that we're very happy about.
Yeah.
But so it's still on the back burner. It's servicing our clients. But once every couple of months we get someone calling saying, those reports, can we get that software that helps us put those together?
Yeah.
So down the track a bit, when we're a bit more settled, mm-hmm. we'll probably look at taking that a bit further.
Yeah, nice. Well, that's it. If you're providing that for your clients at the moment, you can obviously integrate that with your current fees. But the real value add, that can be, you know, valuable to other agencies.
It'll be a whole vein. We'll put somebody in charge of it and away they go.
I love that. I love, you know, that. Something creation out of nothing, or a business creation out of a, you know, side business or a side project. Always talking to tech professionals about having side projects or having something that you can build on the side, or, you know, just to stay technical. I think it's super relevant for people to stay
relevant. It is. And look, we encourage it in our ranks as well. You know, if you've got a pet project or an idea you want to get up and running, don't try and do it from, you know, 11 o'clock till 3 o'clock in the morning at home. Bring it in.
Yeah.
Use the team. Let's all get together and make it sort of, you know, get it to at least a startup point.
Yeah, like proof of concept or MVP, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
I think Google does that, right? Google has 20% work hours or something like that. Or is it 20%? It might be less than that.
I think it's 20%. They have whole days where everyone just stops and does their own things and brings it to the table.
That's good, right?
We'd love to do that. We're not quite big enough, but we've talked about it.
Soon, yeah, I think.
I think 20% is a big shot.
Yeah, it's massive.
If I gave everyone 20% of the days.
I'm not sure all our clients would really want to pay for that, but it'll come.
Yeah.
I agree, but it is a way of trying to generate innovation within a company, which is a challenge for a lot of companies. So it's really exciting to hear you guys, or at least encouraging that internally. That's part A, and then I hear the same's happening on the StreamYard side as well.
Yeah. So COVID hit, and there was very much a need. A lot of physical environments couldn't happen anymore. Physical conferences and things you could actually go to couldn't happen. So we kind of were going, oh, something's happening. I think we need to we were working on a project that was sort of a live conferency type thing. And then COVID hit and it was like, no, we're working on this live conference thing now. We're going to do this live. And actually we're to the point where we're now have a big client that we're doing 13, 14 live streams simultaneously for those guys using the platform we designed.
So when it got quiet during COVID, we'd been tinkering with this idea of a platform that allowed clients to run their live streamed events on a website.
Yeah.
Like social media is great. There's lots of reasons why you would stream to social media, but there are times when you want to control that a little bit more. Where you want to have the privacy, you want to have the copyright, and having a quick and easy and branded website that's templatized, up it goes, and within minutes you're playing through that, that has a few extra, video on demand tab and all of those things. So we'd been tinkering with that for a couple of years, and when it got quiet at the beginning of COVID, there was nothing else to do. So it was like, hey, let's focus on that because we're getting a lot of calls for conferences and things. And sure enough, within 2 weeks, we were ready and people couldn't even run conferences from a conference venue. So I remember we ran around doing quotes for about 2 weeks for big conferences. We'll send 10 cameras, we'll have them on the stage. And then they all got canned. the government makes a call and suddenly, no, we're not doing those.
No.
We just happened to have that platform ready where we said, you know what, we have this page. It can be designed to look like your event.
Yeah.
It's a web link. So they don't have to be hooked into social. And all your presenters, multiple presenters can be at home.
Yeah, dialed in.
And they don't look like, it doesn't look like a Zoom meeting. It's actually got a lot more going for it. It's got interactivity, Q&A, live feedback. And they jumped at it. It was just the right product at the right time. And then they got bigger. We offered a custom-made version of that where we can add functionality. And, lo and behold, we're doing massive projects
it's
now.
Scaled. The thing about all the other ones like Zoom, you can scale to a lot of big size, a lot of numbers, but we were able to implement this one thing and then it can grow and grow and grow. So there's the ability to scale, which is something like, I don't think it's ever.
Zoom's good to up to about 50 people and then it starts to break down pretty quickly.
And then these people start looking really, really small. Yeah. So we were like, we can do that sort of alternative because a lot of foundations, a lot of institutions were doing it's Zoom and they don't have as much control of the look and feel and their branding and stuff. It's literally just a black screen and a bunch of faces. So we wanted to really diversify that and make something that you can control from the ground up, from what it looks like inside to the actual website. So that's what we developed.
Can be deployed within.
Yeah.
That's phenomenal.
Yeah.
We're excited about it. Oh, I'm thinking about different things.
Still excited about it,
That's exciting and very relevant. It's going to be relevant going forward. I think we do a lot at New Tech People trying to promote the local meetup scene and things like that. There's some of the meetups that you lose that interactivity once you go to a Zoom meeting and definitely numbers fall off and things like that.
A child jumps into the shot, a dog starts barking, all that stuff.
So having a platform for that encourages that interactivity on top of the actual video content
And we can, really exciting. We can actually manage the whole thing remotely.
Yeah.
So, you know, often Chad from his home in, where are we going to say you live? Singleton?
Singleton, Maitland.
has the setup in his home office.
The Hunter.
In the Hunter.
Yeah.
And we also found that it's an ideal platform for podcasting as well.
Yeah, nice.
That came out of like, we need a necessity. We have this podcast to record. We have to keep, we have a podcast we have to record. Let's get that done. What can we do? And I was like, give me a day. And I thought about it and I was like, what can we use? I know we can use the same platform we're using to do these live streams for people. Why don't we just use that? And all the audio comes in, it's all synced up. It's within like 400 milliseconds of each other. You're getting all the audio and stuff in. So yeah, it became this thing we built that could be this other thing we can do, which like it just opens the world of opportunity for live streaming.
And I mean, they can keep or throw away the video element, but they're looking at each other, which is important in a podcast.
How's that exactly?
And branded. Right,
And so we had this Adobe MarTech Talk podcast series we were producing. The host is in Singapore.
Mm-hmm.
The agency is in Sydney. The client's in New Zealand, in Auckland.
Yeah.
And we're in Maitland, sort of doing our thing.
Remotely in different.
And it all came together beautifully. So they've ordered another series and away we go.
That's great. Again, scratching your own itch, right?
That's right.
And then also probably the other part of that is just solving a problem.
Yeah.
There's a lot of companies or a lot of, you know, people have an idea about it, something, but not knowing who that audience is or who are your customers here. But your customers, obviously, internally, it's yourself. And then once you've built it for yourself, you can take that externally and
And look, I've noticed a couple of other companies have solved the same problem in a different way, and I love seeing that. I think can we mention their name? There's a company called Sage Events who have dealt with the same thing we have by building their own custom-made studio with walls of Zoom meeting screens and the presenter standing in front of these massive walls.
Yeah.
Both of them will do the same job.
Yeah.
They'll just do it differently.
If you don't have a competitor, is it a problem? Is it a problem worth solving, right? Like the fact that you've got a competitor there actually gives a lot of premise to the fact that it is a very real problem.
It just gives clients alternatives and options. You know, I'm looking at that one going, well, they couldn't have done that because their host was in Singapore.
Yeah.
You know, whereas, you know, we've got things where, you know, if their host and everybody else is in the one place, i.e. Sydney or Melbourne or Newey, that might work really well. There might be a dynamic in that works as well as ours.
Nice.
And I love watching that too. I've noticed over the last 3 or 4 months there's been some real ingenuity in how that's been done, and we've pushed it pretty hard. Our mantra is reimagine how you talk to your customers now and how you interact with your customers. And it's just that constant force of reimagining is a really good, and it's an enjoyable thing too. We're not cookie cutting.
No.
There's some really great ideas out there that aren't ours, and I love watching those. I want to play with them. I want to get on one of those conferences because we've got enough going on. We'll get ideas from that. And isn't that how it always works? You know, you do something, then somebody gets an idea and bounces off that.
Mm-hmm.
That whole collaborative technique is something that, you know, as probably the oldest guy in the room, I'm still battling to really get my head around, but I love it. I've gone from fearing it to loving it now, that sort of collaborate.
Yeah.
And that's a good thing.
Oh, I completely agree. Hey, the collaboration, you can leverage other people's know-how. There's a lot of, you know, different people can bring different things to the table.
And live without fear. Just go with it.
I think this whole time has shown us that we can trust. Like before COVID hit, was from our experience, you know, it would be maybe 30% of people would do live streams. And actually one of my counterparts in Sydney, he would do a pre-recorded live streaming that he would get them to play because they didn't trust the people that they were presenting. And now COVID has made working from home like a thing we have to do. And we've, you know, we were able to embrace that. Like, and there's some techniques you probably talk about if you want it, but like, it's gone from this thing we fear, and that's every generation, to now it's the thing we must trust to get life happening.
Yeah.
And I think
it's very philosophical.
Thank you. but I think the fact that we have trust in it means that we can evolve the way we do things at a faster pace than we were before. Because before it was like, oh, it's a thing that we kind of push away.
That's forced change.
Yeah. It's great. I think, you know, unfortunately, with the COVID being so tragic, it still has been a great time for evolution of everything.
Definitely the trust piece on, from my perspective, a lot of the companies I work with, working from home, working remotely, right? That trust piece. There are some companies that wouldn't trust their employees to work from home because, hey, how do I know if they're working or not? Because I can't see them. And they would have had no work from home policies, right? They had a policy, you can't work from home.
Yeah, the policy is no.
And until they're forced to. Yep. And now they're forced to. People are working from home. Work is still being done.
Yeah.
Once COVID's gone, how do you manage that? You can't have that same conversation with somebody in the future that says, no, you know, we can't work from home at all because, you know, you won't get work done. We just did that for 6 months.
I think some of the challenges to business segments that are going to come out of this are fascinating as well. We started looking at a remote model about a year ago, and it scared me. It scared me because for my entire working career, building a brand and building a culture in an organization was around what happened when those people were in the same building. And I couldn't get my head around how do we do it when they're all not in the building. And I read books. I interviewed companies when I went to the States that had done it successfully. I was really looking to try and find a way to get my head over that hump as an employer that has for years and years had good company cultures, but that's because we're all in the same room. We're high-fiving, there's water coolers, there's posters on the wall, we're way to go. We were ready. I think we were a little bit more ready for it when COVID hit. I wasn't quite there, but we'd done all the homework. Mm. And so when it was time to send everyone home, we had a blueprint. You know, I've got a business administration manager, and she and I looked at it and went, well, we've actually been planning for this for a while. I just hadn't taken the step.
Yeah.
So when we did it, we found that the advantages to our team dynamic, implementing some of the things we'd learnt and put in our blueprint, meant that our teams are much more productive now. So We've agreed as a team that we're going to go back into the office one day every 2 weeks for the next 6 months until our lease runs out.
Yeah,
because we work better this way, and the brand, the culture is stronger now than it's ever been.
And I think the reason why that has worked so well is that when we did go home, you made the choice of going, yeah, but every single morning we work, we get up, we go, and it's 9 o'clock. 9 o'clock is the time we all meet. We all talk. You can talk about that if you want to. But we all meet and have a chat, and it sets your day up. Because you drive into work, and then you walk in, and you sort of do it, and then you turn your computer on at 9 o'clock or 8:30.
We were having trouble putting WIPs together, like work in progress meetings once a week, where everyone met in the office. We couldn't do it. No. Someone was away. Someone was sick. Someone was at a client meeting that shouldn't have been scheduled.
Yeah,
mostly me. All of those things were just holding us back there, and now we have one a day, and everyone's there. Bang on time, ready. You know, we put a crazy thing into that to create some team bond. It's the stuff I'd read about.
Yeah.
And it's worked.
Yeah.
And now it's an essential part of our day, and everyone loves it.
Yeah. It's funny. It's funny how, you know, these sort of the pandemic here has forced change upon people, and some people adapt and some people won't. And the companies that do adapt will succeed and thrive through that, and others won't, and they will be no longer.
That's right.
Some of them through their own fault, some of them through no fault of their own. It's just, that's change, right? But it's forced changes upon other businesses.
Yeah. Yeah. My wife's in and works for another IT company, and they too have made that move. So now we're going through that battle of shit. We've got two home offices to set up permanently now.
Yeah.
How do we do this? So we're fighting over spare rooms and sunrooms and things that, trying to work it out.
There's a lot of challenges. But, yeah. I think apartments, you know, having a look, does it have a study or does it have a second bedroom we can use for a study will potentially become something that, you know, people are looking for in the future. It'll be very interesting. I definitely wouldn't want to be in the old the commercial real estate game right now.
No, well, somebody was talking about this in one of the Adobe podcasts we were producing, and one of our clients had a very interesting perspective. We all negotiated, well, those of us that could negotiated lower rent.
Yep.
Particularly the retail spaces that just couldn't open. And as we come back, there's a lot of them, I think it's the Accent Group, have, you know, and they've got Athlete's Foot and Skechers and Platypus, et cetera, and they're coming back to their landlords, renegotiating their contracts. And, you know, without blowing too many trade secrets, the rent they pay is going to be a result, going to be determined by the success of the business, which is a very new model for retail landlords.
Yeah.
And it'll be really interesting to see how that happens. Ours said, well, tell us how, give us your figures and we'll adjust the rent. And I had to work out whether we were comfortable with that or not.
Yeah.
There's going to be massive change in that commercial leasing space. Yeah. As a result of this.
Especially with an online business like yours and a growing software element to that.
Yeah.
Your success is not going to be determined by the fact that you've got a physical presence anywhere.
That's right. Well, for quite a while now, we've been looking, we've got clients in Sydney and Melbourne.
Yeah.
And for about a year, we had an office in Melbourne. And we were flying down to service our clients and be in that office. We weren't quite at the point where we could hire staff in Melbourne because there wasn't quite enough business to justify it. So we were holding off and holding off. Now, I mean, I've hired a new head of development in our organization. He'd never entered the building before we gave him the job.
Yeah.
Our old one moved on, and in the middle of COVID, I'm interviewing for one of the most important positions in the company. And, yeah, he'd started for us. He'd been working with us for a month before I actually met him face-to-face.
And, you know, and he's a tall bugger. He was. He's a tall boy. He's a tall boy. I had no idea.
And those, you know, it was funny when all the staff came back together, two of them hadn't met everyone else.
Everyone else.
Yeah.
So lots of, you know, you're taller than I thought. You're smaller than I thought.
I think the biggest thing is that we wouldn't have been where we are with the work from home stuff if it wasn't for the technology that's available to us right now.
Very true.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
On that note, what technologies are you guys using to enable this work from home?
You're the tech guy.
All right. Well, so we are using Zoom.
Yeah.
We are using our platform to do meetings. Actually, it's been a very cool way to have a meeting. So we were able to bring people in who will maybe want to use the platform. We'll actually go, here's a link. Just click that on. Once you just open up your browser, you can just jump into our platform and have a look. So we're able to actually meet them and show them whilst they're on screen what they're going to be experiencing. That's been pretty cool. We've used
Phoenix.
A lot of Facebook. We've been using a lot of Google Hangouts. And we've been like back and forth. Lots of like the most amount of emails. I think I've never seen the most emails in my inbox ever.
Yeah, right.
Well, it's funny. I was saying to you beforehand that because all of our clients have their own platforms as well,
we
have to be very agnostic from our home offices.
Yeah.
So, you know, Google Hangouts to BlueJeans to Zoom to vMix.
I think I've got them all downloaded on my Mac.
Yeah. And we're bouncing around all day.
I never knew BlueJeans existed until we had someone go, hey, can you make some BlueJeans? I'm like, well, isn't that a thing you buy at the shop? Yeah. No, it's a platform you get on. We're like, okay, so we did, and now we're on there as well.
I think LinkedIn uses BlueJeans. I think that's where I've been using
it.
Microsoft Teams.
And it also, like LinkedIn, all the video chats, like because our clientele is so varied, as you said, we have to be agnostic. We have to go, okay, yep, sweet, we'll do that. Done, we're there.
Sometimes you're staring at the wrong camera when it's
turned. Yeah, you're like, hey guys, oh, it's over here. Hi guys, one second, I'll just move the camera over here. Yeah.
We have that. You guys mentioned earlier, and I think it was when we were talking about different parts of the business, different priorities, managing different priorities. So if we can tie that in just this productivity type conversation, is there a philosophy? Is there a method, a piece of software? Is there anything you use to manage those differentiating priorities within the business?
Yeah, look, it's a really good question, and has tested just that need to be agile in that space has tested us, particularly over the last 3 or 4 months.
Nimble, if you will.
Nimble is not what we were for a while with how we were dealing with that. But again, a year's worth of research, and over in Boston, I met with a company that actually started in Wollongong. That's a project management CRM software called Accello or Accello.
Yeah.
Now, because we have so many different processes in our business, things like Trello, Monday.com, etc., Jira, we had used them all, and every single one of them was great to a point, and then there'd be something that it didn't do.
Yeah.
And look, several years of people suggesting these things. And it's like, we tried that a year ago. It doesn't do this. Accello's been the first one that I've seen where I've kind of gone, guys, I think this does it all, and everyone's tested it. And it's a six-week implementation across our entire organization now, but we're right in the middle of it.
Mm, all right.
And we're really looking forward to it because the control it gives me without being hands-on is really important, but the support it gives account managers and project managers to keep things running. And, of course, our accounts team are linked in.
Yep.
There's access that clients can have to projects.
Yeah, nice.
And there's a great calendar that means I can see what everyone's doing. And they can. Everyone can see each other's diaries and sort of go
on the platform they want.
I'm not going to ring you and say, are you available on Wednesday? I can see you're not. So I'm going to just go and see if Thursday or Friday works. Saving us so much time.
So many people have a preference. Some people like Outlook. Some people like Google, like calendars. Some people like just about iPhone calendars. It just meshes all
together. We sound like an ad for a cello, don't we?
Yeah, the reason you sold me on it because I like this. Is that it does everything I need to do. So that's kind of, I'm really looking forward to it being fully fledged in our business.
Yeah, projects and retainers, like that. So, we're excited about it. We're all sort of-
I'm excited about it.
We're in the middle of
training
and implementation. I think we go live in about 2 weeks.
Yeah,
that's nice.
And that was the other thing. I was looking for that pill, that sort of, you know, what software can I get that fixes everything? Yeah. And our first attempt failed because it was very much I think I saw it too much as a silver bullet.
Yeah.
You know, we'll get that and everything will be fine. But it's actually a 12-month process of changing our culture to work with it.
I think a lot at that point, exactly. I think very rarely is it the software's fault. I've used enough CRM tools in my day. They got more features than you can poke a stick at. It's, you know, does your culture match it? Are you actually going to use it? Do you use it properly? Do you use it consistently? You know, the data that you can get out of it's only as the data as good as the data.
And look, we were quite ill-disciplined in that space. And as a group, we decided, listen, Cello will be go live in 6 weeks. That's our chance to practice getting all our old, antiquated manual systems. We've all got to apply ourselves to be the people that use the systems properly. So even that's lifted our game in the last few weeks. And we're still using spreadsheets in some cases.
Yeah, that's something we're focused on.
We're doing a lot more with it now.
Yeah. There's a risk behind as well.
Yeah, I think COVID provided that opportunity for us as well, where we made some calls to improve our back end processes, and we implemented a new automation tool as well. So,
It's a
product specific to, we use Bullhorn as our tracking system CRM, and this product's called Sense, and it takes a lot of the data and then breaks automation off the data in there. So they tie in really smoothly together. Let's call it a little bit recruitment specific. So. Not overly exciting, but, you know, those are the sort of things that should help your business.
It's an industry that's had a lot of players doing that, hasn't it?
Yeah.
So you're finding the one that works for you is really good.
Yeah. I agree. You guys have built software internally. I think there's a lot of companies I work with that have made a play to do that, either using an external agency to do that, to build some software to either automate some of their processes internally or fix one of their own needs. Some of them are going a step further than that and hired internal development capability. If you were to provide any advice based on your experience, if a company's got a problem, they're looking for software to be a fix of that, is it look externally to start with? Is it build that internal capability? If you had to, there's no one fix for every company, if you had to provide some advice, you've had some success to any companies that are looking to look at software in fixing internal processes, scratching their own need, what advice would you give?
My advice would be get someone to consult with you to prepare the brief or the scope. Pay them separately to the people you're paying, if it's an external or an internal, for the execution, but get the scope done first by a professional. Pay them well, let them spend the time, because that scope I find is the be all and end all of things going well or badly. External agencies or even external development companies, and there's some really good ones in Newcastle, are still at the whim if they're squeezed for time and there's not a really well thought through scope at the beginning, then there's inevitably problems and blowouts as the thing gets closer to completion. But if you spend, it's like, you know, measure twice, cut once. Get an external to come in and pull that scope, do that scoping process. And then it may be that having an internal is the right way to go because you need someone very close to the operations. Or if it's a big project, then take that scope to the external. I find that, you know, whenever projects like that, we've either done them, executed them for people, that scoping process is undervalued.
Yeah.
You know, everybody's trying to win that big project, so they squeeze their dollars down. And where we're taking it out is the time to scope properly.
Yeah.
And if you get that scope right, everything, no matter which way you do it, will work.
It's the roadmap.
Nice.
That's the only advice I got.
That's really good advice. I think, yeah, it's, you know, measuring it's hard twice. When it comes to providing advice, is there a book or a podcast or any piece of content that both of you have consumed that you think, hey, that's been highly valuable to me, it's something I'd recommend to others?
I read quite a few books. I do audio books a lot. There's four that have really made a difference to me in the last year. One is called Remote.
Yeah.
I've forgotten who the author for that one is, but it was
really good. We'll find it and link it up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Deep Work by Cal Newport, an amazing read. Atomic Habits has made a big difference to me. And then one that's more personal, I think, is Supernormal by Meg Jays.
Yeah.
And that was personally for me, it unlocked a lot of things for me in terms of my leadership styles and the way I operate. Yeah, this is a pretty quick dump of some titles there, but
yeah, yeah,
they're the four that have made a big difference to me. Mm. Yeah, I've just started reading Atomic Habits again.
Yeah.
I had a huge shift in my health immediately having read that book, and so much so that I got really excited by it. It's been permanent, it stayed with me. I want to go back and do that, read it again and have another idea.
Yeah, nice.
And apply those principles. So I recommend that book.
Nice.
What about you?
I think for me, one of the biggest ones was Darren Brown's The Confessions of a Conjurer. And it seems weird, but the way he thinks about it's a book that goes through, it's an audio book that I've read, that I read. That goes through the start and the end of a trick around with people, and it goes through his thought processes. For me, that was really interesting because he's all about the intricacies of people, and I'm a massive fan of people like Robert Kiyosaki and Richard Branson for the way that they're able to be themselves, be quirky, but also ability to, you know, bring people around them that's a team, and I'm a massive person who loves teams. And so moving forward in our business at the moment, where it's scaling up quite quickly, I have to bring a leadership perspective and the way that people think and what they do to my work. So those are the ones that
interest me. That's nice. And I have not had that recommended before. So
Darren Brown is great.
That's good. Follow-on question to that: is there anyone in particular that you would recommend people follow for good quality information?
I don't know that it's universal, but I was put onto the Mojo Radio Show a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And look, there are a couple of middle-aged white men that run that, and comes with that warning, but the people they interview are extraordinary, and the way they extract their life lessons in a really fun way once a week. Yeah, it's probably my go-to.
Nice.
Do you know it?
No.
Gary Birtwistle.
Yeah, right. I might check that out. Mm. Now I'm on the road again. I'm out and about a little bit more. The podcast time is about to increase again.
No, couldn't speak highly enough of it.
Yeah, right.
And for me, it's the No Budget Film School. They talk about the film. Obviously, I'm the head of video, so it's massive for me. But they talk about projects that they do, the equipment they use, all that stuff. I'm a massive camera geek, so that and also. I check out everything at NAB over in America, although they're probably not going to hold one this year, all the tech equipment for, you know, photography and film and stuff like that. And then I also listen to No Film School, which is another one that's about tech and about the way to use visuals to storytell.
For me. Appreciate your time coming in today. I would have thought, people that, you know, would look at you as obviously as a digital agency and a video arm. I think, you know, once you open and lift under the hood and you see everything that's going on, building your own technology, I think it's an exciting story and hopefully, you know, really growing arm of your business as well in the future. So
Look, you've spiked my enthusiasm for both those projects. Absolutely. I'll go back to the office and start planning a little bit more immediately than I was.
No, I love hearing about companies, you know, being forced to change and then leveraging that change, looking at it as an opportunity and seeing where that could take you. So exciting times.
Thank you.
No, they are.
And thanks for coming in today.
No, thanks for having
us. Cheers. Thank you for listening to this episode of New Tech People. To stay up to date with all our episodes, our show notes, and past episodes, please visit www.newitechpeople.com.au. Thank you.